Southampton's Voice.
Voice FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. From startups to established companies, I'll be bringing you a variety of guests from Southampton's business community. And in today's show, we're talking about The Point, we're talking about Richard Attenborough, a Yeti, and building audiences. Today I'm in the studio with the incredible Louisa Midburn, Business Director of The Point and Bury Theatre. Louisa, welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Excellent. I'm really excited that you could make it. And of course, we're going to be talking about the fantastic Bury Theatre and of course, The Point, which is an incredible theatre in the heart of Eastleigh. So let's jump on in, shall we?
Let's go for it.
Let's go for it. So Louisa, take us back, because for you and your own journey, it all started with playing the piano and making music. Tell us more.
It did. So I think my parents were definitely of that generation where they wanted me to do something and have the opportunities to do things that they didn't have. So they really encouraged me to play musical instruments.
Amazing.
So I started off playing piano and then added another couple of instruments to that, clarinet and saxophone. And then it got to that sort of time in life when you tried to decide what to do next. And I ended up going to university and studying music, which was very exciting for about, I would say about a week, until I really realised that, playing and performing with other superb musicians really wasn't the thing that really drove me. And it took me a little while, but it really came to me that actually making it happen for others was the thing that really excited me.
I know that when we were having a chat last week, you mentioned the word imposter syndrome, and it was very real for you at that point.
Absolutely. Sitting with amazing people who can play and who can sing and who seem to be able to do everything, that voice or that little imp on your shoulder that's saying, you know, they're better than you can't do it, it was just huge. And I think especially when you're 18 and you've not really been out in the world, you know nothing really. That I probably internalized that voice quite a lot, which is a bit of a shame. I am a good musician. I'm okay. I'm not the best.
What instruments can you play?
So I can play piano and clarinet, and I usually say a bit of saxophone. And egg shaker. Really good at egg shaker.
I love that. You're going to have to do some sort of performance at some point. It's a shame we couldn't bring some of the instruments with us today.
Definitely a shame.
So what happened then? So obviously the performance side of it at uni didn't necessarily, you know, go the way that perhaps, you know, well, it didn't go the way you wanted it, but you just felt that wasn't for you. Your path was going in a different direction.
Yeah, definitely. So I was really lucky. There was a chance for me to do arts management as part of my degree, which I started and ended up continuing to sort of be in that field. So my first job after leaving uni, when you know you leave uni, you've got absolutely no idea what you're going to do next. But I was really lucky that I got a job with a company called Horse and Bamboo Theatre Company.
I remember you saying, yeah.
So at the time, their big uniqueness was they were the UK's only horse-drawn theatre company.
Travelling around,
horse and cart, carrying their set with them. The actors and performers would walk maybe 10 or 15 miles every day, set up camp, make a fire, cook, and then the next day they would put all the equipment, usually into a village hall, so it was all rural touring, and do a bit of a rehearsal and then perform a show. And maybe they would stay one or two nights, but then they would pack their camp down, and then walk to the next place.
And would you travel alongside them, or how did that work?
So I was normally in the office doing all the admin and the management, and I started off as admin assistant and very quickly sort of worked my way through. It was the beauty of such a small organization that you get to do a little bit of everything. And just absolutely loved it. Loved the people, loved the buzz about I suppose watching people enjoy themselves, which has been a real theme. And particularly that company was so close to their audiences, and that's how they would generate their audiences by walking, by talking to people, by telling them about the show. And because they were, you know, the tour was maybe only, each day was only 10 or 15 miles to the next spot, then most of the community would come and see, and it really felt like a community performance.
It's amazing. When you were just saying that, that closeness with the audience, it's almost like that makes a successful marketing campaign, in my opinion. Being close to your audience, having that connection is absolutely crucial.
Absolutely.
And what we've seen there is it's just so raw, isn't it? Was it like a, what was the learning curve like being an admin assistant and sort of dropping yourself into that world where you mustn't have sort of experienced anything like that before?
No, not a clue. not a clue. But
learning on the job.
But definitely learning on the job, jumping in the deep end, having a go. And I suppose really realising that it's not a job where you have a task and you finish it and then you move on to the next one. And then at the end of the day, all your to-do list is empty. It's an organic growth.
Constantly evolving.
Absolutely.
Oh, I bet.
And every day is different.
Nice. I like that. And then so we did that, and then what happened next?
So after that, I worked in a few venues, usually theatres. And then I did quite a long stint for an orchestra. So I went back to my musical roots, hence the Egg Shaker, and worked alongside professional musicians, putting education into that orchestral mix, I suppose. So we do quite a lot of participatory projects, and then the culmination of that would be young people getting to perform directly alongside the orchestra. In fact, more than that, the young people led it. So the orchestra were just sort of supporting and nurturing that. And again, another amazing experience. Met some fantastic musicians, worked with some brilliant composers, and most importantly, worked with amazing young people.
Was that a pretty rewarding time for you?
Yeah, so you know, when you go out for a drink and somebody asks you what you do, and when I used to say I work for an orchestra, and if somebody said, are you a musician in an orchestra, I'd have to say no. And then that conversation sort of comes to a halt. But so what I used to say, probably after a glass of wine, but what I would say is I make magic and I make a difference.
Nice.
And it's trying to get that essence of, you know, what a piece of music does to your mood, you know, when you're feeling low or a bit down, and you know that there's pieces of music that can just change that. And it doesn't matter what kind of music it is. It could be classical music, but equally it could be, you know, a massive ballad from power ballad from Queen or something. So yeah, that making magic, that little bit of magic that music brings, and I find that with all of the arts, actually.
And I think you probably bring a lot of that into what you're doing now, but we won't get into what you're up to just yet, for the, because this is all very fascinating, and I want to delve a bit more into what happened next, really. But I just want to say to the listeners, sitting opposite Louisa right now, your eyes are like lit up, smiling, and you can just see that this is kind of where you were meant to be, I guess. You absolutely love it.
I think I've been really lucky that I found something that I love doing.
Yeah.
Really lucky. And I look at friends and people that I meet who have got very different lifestyles to me, but they don't like going to work every day, or, you know, it's not a thing. And for me, I've got to the point where I don't think about work-life balance. I just think about my life, and what I do for work is just a massive part of it, which I love.
Do you think that this is, you sort of almost found your passion?
Definitely. And I'm not saying that I don't have bad days, because I definitely do, just like everybody else. And, you know, there are times when it's really tough. Mm. But that's what keeps me going. Something that I love.
I love that. So you did the stint with the orchestra.
And, I did.
And the education side of things. What happened next?
So it was quite a few years ago. And at the time, there was very little training for sort of arts managers. And I was really lucky that I got onto the inaugural year of a leadership programme, which was completely cross-arts. And it really gave me the skills and confidence to make a bit of a step change. So then my next job was for an organisation called Attenborough Arts, which was on the campus of the University of Leicester, so up in the Midlands. And that organisation at its heart was accessible. So it was all about making sure that disability was at the heart of everything that we did, and making sure that everybody could be included, no matter what, And the the exciting thing was, and the clue is in the name, that it was one of the Attenborough boys that was the patron and helped set that up. So it was Richard Attenborough that I ended up working with.
Brilliant. And what was that like?
So when I worked with him, he definitely looked like Kris Kringle from Miracle on 34th Street. He was an amazing man, very, very sharp, and very generous. I think that's the thing. Probably the most well-connected person I have ever met. He was into sport, he was into art, he was into politics, he had connections with the royal family. You know, his little black book was probably spilling over. And I think that was genuinely because he was such a nice man.
Yeah, and he had an incredible collection of Picasso pottery, by all accounts.
He did. I was very lucky and I got invited to his house a couple of times. And the very first time I went, you know, obviously super nervous to meet Lord Attenborough and Father Christmas.
As you would expect. Yeah.
Absolutely. And at the time he was reviewing his Picasso pottery ceramics collection, because he was actually about to gift some of it to the city of Leicester, and it was all over the floor. And yeah, I was trying to not have a clumsy moment and trip over and break some of it. Really precious.
Oh, I love that. I think what the listeners will come to learn in quite a short space of time, I think all of these experiences were kind of leading you to what you're doing now. So you did the leadership qualification, which you said was a little bit of a step change in your career.
Definitely.
And then what happened next? Because it was something involving the Blue Apple Theatre Company.
Yeah, so as happens in life, my partner got a job in the south down here. So I've been based in the Midlands and Manchester for most of my life. And so we made that transition down to the south. And I got a really lovely contract with a theatre company based in Winchester called Blue Apple Theatre. And that was, it was a really lovely transition because it was a learning disabled theatre company. Again, amazing performers in that, some great theatre practitioners as well that I worked with. And I had that for 12 months and had a great time. And it gave me a chance to sort of settle into the area, have a look around. I've got two children. They got settled into school as well down here. And then it led me to where I am now.
Well, hold that thought, because we're going to take a really quick break. We've got some ads, we've got some music. That's absolutely flown by, isn't it?
It really has.
The first section. But join us after the break, because we'll be delving into what it takes to manage a performing arts venue. So don't go anyway. Don't go away. Don't go away, should I say. See you soon.
Voice FM.
You name it, we'll collect it. So a bed? Yep. A sofa? Yep. All right, what about a shed? Yes. So anything? Everything non-hazardous. Hi there, I'm Steve.
And I'm Woody.
And we're the co-founders of Ethiclear.
We collect waste and clear houses.
And we do it ethically.
Because if your waste is good enough to be used again,
we'll make sure it is.
As Ethiclear has a network of like-minded people around Southampton.
So for anything
of almost any size
that you can't shift,
book your clearance at ethiclear.co.uk.
So I got a home office in the garden, and in the spring and the autumn it's perfect. But in the middle of winter and summer, it's not fun. The heater costs a fortune when it's cold outside, and in the summer, opening the windows just isn't enough. Which is why I got Just Coolers to install a small air conditioning unit. It keeps me cool in the summer and warm in the winter. It's the most cost-effective way of doing it. And with a 5-year guarantee and prices from £799, what's not to like? For your free quote, just visit just-coolers.com and keep your home office just right.
Voice FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. And I am in the studio with the incredible Louisa Milburn, Business Director of The Point in Eastleigh. Louisa, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you.
Part one absolutely flew by.
I couldn't believe it.
what an incredible journey. So we're here talking about The Point in Eastleigh, a venue that, quite frankly, absolutely punches above its weight. Tell us a little bit more about The Point. What is the point of The Point?
What's the point? Exactly. That's the point.
That's the point.
So I joined in 2017, but The Point has a much bigger history than me, definitely. So I think the building was built in around 1890. So it's pretty old. And it was built originally as Eastleigh's civic offices and town hall. Mm-hmm. So it's always had a community function, really lovely auditorium with a bit of a stage and seating. So I would imagine that back in the day, people will have seen all sorts of things there. They'll have been and seen bands. They'll have probably done tea dances. They've probably even been to weddings in that building. But I think probably in the 80s, that sort of community use sort of tailed off, where other venues came along for that kind of community activity. And I suspect the council outgrew those civic offices and moved out. So at the time, there was a really superb arts officer working for Eastleigh Borough Council, and I think she really saw the potential and applied for funding. And I think we were in one of the very first organisations to get national lottery funding when that very first came in, and did a big refurbishment. So turned the town hall into the theatre as we now know it. So we've got a 300-seater auditorium.
Oh, wow.
A lovely flat stage, so really nice and accessible, a cafe bar and a dance studio. But she wasn't satisfied at that. And maybe 10 years later, she added to that, so spilled out into the library, which is next door, which is another old building, 1915. The library had moved out by then. And turned that into a studio theatre, so a really lovely studio theatre space, and sandwiched those two buildings together with an atrium. And then, again, wasn't satisfied. So built on to that a brand new bit called the Creation Space, which is probably not known at all by very many people. And it's a really unique space which allows artists, both local and sort of regional and national, and sometimes even international artists come, and they use that space to develop new work. And the special thing is that it's also got accommodation and a kitchen, so they get to be in there and be resident and, you know, create their magic 24 hours a day if they so wanted to.
I couldn't believe that when you told me. It's almost like a residential place for, you know, actors to,
yeah,
you know, plan or come up with new show ideas.
Absolutely. And we've had so many different kinds of people come in. So it might be just a single artist wanting some just space away to try things out, to write a piece, or, any kind of piece, really. Or it could be a company that, you know, have done a show before and just want to do some rehearsals and refine it a little bit before it goes back out on tour. And sometimes those pieces of work end up on our stage, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes they tour all around the UK. And the furthest afield a show's ever toured that we know of is New York, and got some really amazing reviews. And it takes with it that sort of Made in Eastleigh brand.
I love that.
So, yeah, but going back to this arts officer, who was now probably a much better title than arts officer, she also wasn't satisfied there. So she also was involved in creating another theatre space called the Berry Theatre, which is our sister venue, which we also manage, and that's over in Hedgend.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's overall, this is definitely it. That's the point. It really punches above its weight.
Doesn't it? And it's funny, isn't it? Because it's a building and an organisation with so much heritage, and yet even today you meet people, they'd never even heard of The Point.
I know, and maybe we need some marketing advice on that, but we try really hard to put that that message out, but of course you don't know what you don't know. And we're really keen on ensuring that particularly our most local communities, both in Hedgend and in Eastleigh, really know that there's stuff that they can get involved with.
Yeah.
So that community element is really important to us.
Yeah, tell us a bit more about that, because you do a lot of work around engaging with the community. I think it's absolutely brilliant. Tell us more.
So we have a program of professional shows, professional theatre shows, and there's a little bit of something for everyone. We have comedy. We've got Russell Kane coming in a couple of weeks. We had Ed Byrne at Christmas. And then we also support the local amateur scene. So we've got some amazing community partners that come in. And in fact, we have Panto just starting. So lots of people maybe saw Panto before Christmas, but I think this is the best time to see Panto.
Okay.
So we've got many Panto different shows between the two venues over the next few weeks. But then we do work that engages on a very different level. So going out into schools and doing creative workshops and encouraging creativity and performance and bringing that back into our buildings. And then we do a class and participatory program. So you can do all sorts of things. You can learn to tap dance. You can do hip hop. We've got some amazing dance companies. We've got Fab Youth Theatre for all different ages. And they're doing a performance of Emile and the Detectives over Easter. And then we also are very aware that there are some people that probably would never think to come into an art centre because they just think that's not really for me.
Not for them, yeah.
Yeah, so we're aware that we need to try and break down those barriers, and we do that in a couple of different ways. In the summer, we have a strand of work called Summer Social, so we take our programme outside. There's a little garden area outside the point, and we try and replicate that sort of chilled out Ibiza vibe. So we might have a live band or a DJ out there.
I mean, that is talking to me. I'm thinking, when is that happening?
So that will start. It's in the 6 weeks holidays this year. So every Friday and Saturday night, you can come free, just with a donation entry. Bring a picnic blanket and grab a drink and hopefully some pizza.
Well, if you need some DJs, maybe Voice FM could get involved in some way, shape or form.
That would be amazing.
Wow. This is, tell us more, because I'm just like, oh, what, this, all of this stuff is on our doorstep.
Absolutely. So the other really special community project that we did, and that was in December, it was, we sort of saw that cost of living crisis coming a couple of years ago. And we know that Christmas is a really difficult time, particularly families on low incomes. Mm. It's a tough time of year. It's really cold. You've got to choose between heating and all sorts of other things. So we were really keen that we gave families the opportunity to make memories with their children.
Nice.
So this year we decided to build an ice cave in the point, and we transformed our studio theatre. We've got an amazing technical manager called Tim who did a brilliant job of transforming that space, and it became the home to Timothy the Yeti. Timothy's a puppet, I have to say, but he sleeps quite a lot of the time, and so in the day it was a space for children to come and play and explore. And then four times a day, a storyteller would come and wake Timothy up, and we'd find out a bit more about Timothy. I think he was quite old, got a little bit of maybe dementia, I think. And so trying to reignite his memories through his imagination and through reminiscing. So we found out all about Timothy, and he liked what the things that he liked to do. And then around that space, we had craft activities. So children and their families could come and do a bit of fishing, pretend fishing,
yep,
and cook the fish over the pretend fire. And so, yeah, we found... So overall, we had over 2,500 visitors to see Yeti, the amazing sort of story world, I think we'd call it, immersive story world.
Oh, isn't it? It is immersive. It's such an amazing narrative. And I love the way that you guys have got this incredible ability of really making that connection with the audience. I think it's not an easy thing to do. And I think you guys do a really, really good job of it. How many people came to see the Yeti?
So we think about 2,500 people came to see the Yeti. Some of them took away we made a book. So the thing was, again, completely free at point of entry. And to do that, obviously, we had to fundraise.
Sure.
We were very lucky that Utilita came on board as one of our sponsors, a local company which really... really enjoyed those values that we were trying to promote. And also we had a bit of an environmental theme that we made sure that as much of the set was built from recycled materials. And indeed, we're going to be recycling that set again. So there's that, you know, that legacy lives on.
That's really good. Are you planning anything like that again in the future?
Definitely. So there will be, it won't be Yeti this year, but in December we can definitely expect another immersive story world.
Watch this space.
Yeah, I can't say more than that at the moment.
Louise, I'm quite keen to sort of delve into what the point can sort of do, or what can it offer the business community?
Yeah, so we're at the heart of our community and we have big audiences, as you've heard. We attract all sorts of different people, but the bits about the point that probably people don't know is we already have several businesses located with us. We have office space, and we also have meeting rooms. So, you know, on a very, very practical basis, businesses can come, utilise us. That's been really popular, particularly since COVID, where some businesses have maybe downsized, don't want a space as big anymore, come and use our rooms, or indeed, you know, those people working from home fancy a bit of getting out and about, come and use our cafe bar. Cafe bar's brilliant, by the way. Great coffee.
Good coffee. I was just going to say, yeah, coffee,
great coffee
tick, yeah.
Really, yeah, really good sandwiches. And good cake. But the other thing that I'm trying to build up more and more is really that relationship with our most local businesses. And Utilita was an excellent example where we are really finding we're values led, so we really want to find those opportunities where we find a business and we both want to do similar things. And I don't mean we both want to put on Timothy the Yeti.
No, but your values kind of align.
Yeah, we both want to access those families that maybe wouldn't normally get the chance. So we're really looking for those kind of connections. Yeah, so if any businesses are interested in those kinds of things, or just talking to me a bit more, then feel free to come over for a coffee.
Absolutely, yeah, and some cake by the sounds of it.
Definitely.
But cake. It sounds like a great place if you want to immerse yourself in a creative venue to almost spark that creativity. What a brilliant place to be.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short break. We've got some adverts. We're going to play a little bit of music now, but don't go away, because we're going to come back for part three, where Louisa is going to be delving into some of the challenges that the venues faced along the way, COVID, selling tickets, you know, and there's going to be some really interesting stuff there. And of course, you know, the questions I like to sort of delve into and how Louisa's managed to face those challenges and overcome them. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Live and local. Voice FM.
Let's hear more from Ian at Station Motors.
I think it's important to have a family business. My customers relate to it. I've been doing cars for people and now I'm doing their son's cars. My daughter works in reception and my son's nearly a fully qualified accountant. He does my bookwork, both very good drivers. I used to walk to school past his garage. It was a petrol station back then, so I ended up buying the garage off that family, you know. So I like to think I've brought my family into that family business.
Station Motors Woolston, by the Itchen Bridge.
This is the sound of exercise when it's made fun. It's called VisoSport, and it started in Southampton. You meet up, you play fun games, you exercise, you laugh, you keep fit. It's for people of all abilities. Visit visosport.net or search for VisoSport in Meetup and have fun getting fit.
Southampton's Voice FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. And I'm in the studio with the incredible Louisa, who is a business director over at The Point, which is an incredible theatre based in Eastleigh. punches above its weight. Oh my word. I mean, what an incredible set of things that you guys are doing there. Obviously it's a performing arts venue, but you know, the way that you guys engage with the community and the business community is just on another level. Anyway, Louisa, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing really well, thank you.
Excellent. I mean, that absolutely flew by. This is now the part of the show where I'd love to delve into some of the challenges that you faced along the way and perhaps give some people some inspiration about how to, you know, overcome challenges that they might be facing in their own business journey or personal journey. And of course, when we were chatting last week, you said the thing is, you know, there are people out there that think that, you know, the arts is elite and it's not for them. And that's something, that's a constant hurdle, I can imagine, that you're always trying to overcome. Tell us more.
Yeah, so I suppose we just have to find ways of reimagining that narrative. But we do find that people dismiss stuff that we do before even giving it a go. You know, the minute they hear theatre or arts, they think it's definitely not for them. And then they find out that we do things like Timothy the Yeti and we do our summer social outside, and that is still arts and culture. It's all, you know, it's wide ranging, and I really can guarantee there's something for everyone out there. A lot of the stuff we do is working with the community, trying to rewrite that that narrative around what the arts is and what it isn't, but and what it can do and what it you know, it brings joy. One of our strap lines is creatively igniting Eastleigh. So we have tried to take those words that sometimes put people off just out of there, and it's just about being part of something bigger than you, and sort of thinking how that makes you feel.
It's interesting, because even in its most basic form, you know, a piece of music, we've all got it. There's a song that maybe, you know, strikes a chord, and we listen to that song and it somehow manages to change our mood. And of course, you know, going to the theatre, seeing a show, you know, laughing is obviously an incredible remedy, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, looking at things like taking part in a group yoga class or, dancing outside to a really cool band, a local band, again, makes us feel better, and is great for, you know, social isolation. And since COVID, it's, you know, these are things that have really changed. People that maybe weren't isolated before now are, for lots of different reasons. And I really enjoy sort of thinking beyond just the stage and the bricks and mortar of the building, and working alongside our amazing artistic director Charlotte to think of ways that we can break down those barriers.
Yeah, and I just love the way that you guys are able to connect with an audience. You know, there are definitely some interesting parallels between, you know, your world and the traditional business world, I suppose. But you were saying that after COVID, and people might be surprised to know, but it's almost like you were, when it comes to your audiences, you were kind of almost starting from scratch. You know, you're in a situation where you had a lot of lapsed bookers.
Yeah, so, and that's the term that we would use, you know, somebody that's maybe come quite regularly but now are no longer booking. But if you think that, I mean, COVID hit everyone extremely hard, but you know, the thought of going in the height of COVID, the thought of going and sitting in an auditorium with 300 other people, particularly ones that you didn't know, was probably frightening for everybody. Mm. Right at the height of that.
Sure.
But then, as we went through those iterations of unlocking, you know, opening up, and you know, being able to be in groups of six, and then having social distancing, and we really tried to be fleet of foot and respond to that. And it was really interesting watching who came back sort of straight away, who were a bit more reluctant, and who haven't come back yet. So our family audience, I think, and I'm not an expert in this, but I think, you know, looking back, families were cooped up and their world became very small. And actually part of being a family is that making memories and doing things together. And I think families were desperate to do that. So during COVID, we built a COVID-friendly not sure that's the right phrase, but a COVID safe show called A Christmas Quest. And we turned our theatre space into a space where, you know, groups of six who all knew each other could go round and enjoy an interaction. And it sold out. That sold out. There was a huge appetite for it. And then that was the audience that came back straight away.
I love the ingenuity and the fact that you've had to pivot and adapt. Yeah, brilliant. Tell us more.
And the other audiences that came back and bounced back, right back was our comedy audience. So the comedians that sold out before COVID continue to sell out. There was no issue there. There are some groups though that it's been a slower transition to come back into the building. Particularly maybe some of our older audiences. Some people are less inclined to take risk now. So before, maybe you'd see something in our publicity and say, oh yeah, let's have a night out, let's see what's on at the theatre. We don't know what that is, but we'll give it a go. Some of that has gone now, so people really want to know and to make sure that they're going to have a good time. And I'm pretty sure the cost of living crisis has got a lot to, you know, a big part to play in that as well. So yeah, it's difficult. It's a difficult. I think that's just quite a challenge. And so there's a mixture of different, strategies to try and deal with that. But one of the things we've had to do is really change our business model to adapt to that. And the other thing that happens now is that in lots of instances, people are less inclined to book way in advance. Mm. So traditionally, you know, if a show was put on sale, we might sell tickets for the Christmas show already in May. You know, some people would be very organised, want to plan ahead. And I think we sort of changed during COVID. We didn't do that quite as much because, well, first of all, we couldn't. And then...
And also, you didn't know, did you? You didn't know, I'll book it and then, I might have to cancel that.
Lots of things got cancelled. So, yeah, that's really changed how audiences book. So much more... Not so much walk-up late booking, not that kind of late booking, but maybe leaving it 1 or 2 weeks in advance, which is quite hair-raising for us, not knowing if something's going to sell or not sell.
Yeah, I bet, because obviously, you know, you've got overheads, you've got to manage your cash flow.
Yeah, so our funding model is a real mixture. So we're very lucky, we get support from the local authority. We're part of Arts Council England's national portfolio, which is fantastic. So we get some funding. We also rely on donations and memberships, and the rest of our funding is earned income. So that's, you know, it's down to ticket sales and how we do selling cake and coffee. So it's all very important. And those like office lets, things like that, it's all earned income. And when people leave it to the last minute, that's you know, that change we've had to really accommodate.
Yeah, I bet. I think it's real. I mean, I'm yet to meet a business owner who has an unlimited checkbook when it comes to a marketing budget. Yeah. But I imagine you guys have to be fairly savvy with what you do have.
We do. Budgets aren't huge. And of course, we're really making that transition to digital. And then I think back to those days with Horse and Bamboo when the performers used to go and talk to all their potential audiences. And it's somehow getting the essence of that personal message and storytelling into your digital marketing, especially when you're so bombarded. Social media, you know, it's full of things that you should be doing or
it's a busy place, isn't it?
and then you know, in amongst all of that, hopefully you're following the Point and the Berry Theatre and you'll see our Christmas show pop up and it's you know, a lot of that is getting to people at the right time, you know, the right time in the day, the right time when they're thinking about something. There's a lot of things to think about.
Yeah, I know a lot of business owners, they've sort of moved to this sort of top of mind approach where, you know, they'll just try and be consistent. Because, you know, there's all sorts of stats out there. 20% of your following only 20% of your following will actually see the post that you put out. So yeah. It's actually quite a small figure when you think about it.
It is tiny.
And so you have to be consistent. You can't just kind of, you know, put something out there once a month.
No. And I think also, you know, from my point of view, I follow the point and the bury, and then I'm forever seeing the adverts. I'm like, I think we're overdoing it, but clearly not.
I just think the arts industry, and especially with what you guys are doing, that you've got this incredible sort of ability to be able to kind of adapt and pivot, which I think, you know, the business community could learn a lot from that. I think you have, like I say, faced unprecedented challenges. But I'm curious, what's next for the point? What's on the horizon?
Oh, so, lots of exciting programming. We're just in the process. We still have printed brochures, a small scale.
Because people do love a brochure, don't they?
People love a brochure. So there's something about having something in your hand, having it on the table, constantly looking at it, picking it up, putting it down. I think it probably takes quite a lot of times to persuade somebody to book a ticket. That's our spring season has been announced. So I think I mentioned we've got Panto on at the moment. We've got sellout comedians. Russell Kane is coming. We've got Chris McCausland coming. So lots of really great comedy, some lovely family shows. If you like dinosaurs and volcanoes, check out our website. And then looking towards the summer, we have our free family festival. So on the park in Eastleigh, at Lee Road, and at Greta Park in Hedge End, we have a full day of free arts and cultural activities. And I'm using those words again, but actually it's performance, it's getting involved, it's having something nice to eat, and coming and sharing that with your family and friends. So June 8th and 9th.
Key dates, put them in the diary.
Definitely.
And where? So if people want to find out more online, where do they need to go?
Yeah, if you look up the Point Eastleigh or the Bury Hedge End, you will find us. Website is in a transition mode at the moment. We're very excited. We're going to be getting a new website, so any feedback would be welcome on that.
Excellent. I love that. Louisa, if you were sat opposite someone right now and they were thinking about maybe getting into the arts industry, or maybe doing something similar to what you do, which is, you know, helping the Bury Theatre and the Point sort of develop from a business point of view, what would you say to them? Because it sounds like you've had a whale of a time in this industry.
I definitely have. I still consider myself lucky that I somehow fell into that. What would I suggest? So if you're a young person, there are some amazing courses out there that you can do. Locally, Barton Peveril do a really lovely performing arts course, which obviously is aimed at performers, but has some really interesting arts management in there. You can come and volunteer for us. You can get Brilliant. A little taster of what we do. You could be a volunteer usher. There's loads of benefits to that, mainly that you go and sit in on the show, so you can get to see lots of different things.
That's a perk, isn't it?
Yeah. That is, yeah. So it's a great thing. And we have some really amazing volunteers. I would go and see stuff. That's what I'd do first of all. Go and check out your local art centre or theatre.
Louisa, we're nearly out of time.
Crikey.
I know. It's been absolutely fascinating. And honestly, I just feel nothing but energy in the room. You're so passionate about this. And I just love the journey that you've been on. And I wish you guys every success for the future. I'm definitely going to get myself along to the Point over in Eastleigh, if not for the summer showdown thing. What was it called?
Summer Social. But I think we might actually rebrand it. What do you think to Party in the Park?
Yeah, love it. Yeah, I'm there. If there's a live band and some music and some nice food,
yeah,
then I don't think you'll have any trouble selling tickets for that one. Or it might even be free to turn up.
I'm hoping that we can keep that free to turn up.
Well, that'd be even better, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, look, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for. You've been listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. And I'll be back again with another exciting guest. So, bye for now.
Voice FM. Voice FM.
Don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes. And don't put in your recycling bin dirty tins and dirty plastic bottles.
If any of your recycling is dirty, greasy or wet, your whole bin could be rejected. So follow this golden rule. Keep your recycling clean, dry and loose. And remember,
don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes.
This message is supported by Voice FM. And if you want to know more about recycling in Southampton, visit voicefmradio.co.uk/recycling.